Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And well, it seems like forever since I've been in studio with you. Took all of last week off for Christmas. We did get to replay some of the best interviews of 2020. You know, it was really tough this year to narrow down the interviews that I wanted to play just based off of my favorite from the year. We had a lot of great national interviews, of course. We always have the great local interviews. But that was fun last week to recap some of my favorite segments from throughout the year. And now we can get back down to business, and there is plenty to talk about in the national sports scene. And we can begin with the NBA. We're now three games into it. In fact, the Utah Jazz, they'll play their third game tonight as they take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Start time for this game is set for 6 p.m. David Locke, Ron Boone, they'll bring you the play-by-play call. That'll begin at 5:50, so a 10-minute pregame show throughout the year. It's not the only game, and it's great to have actual basketball to talk about. The regular season really popped up. I mean, we had next to no offseason whatsoever. Before you know it, we're talking about the regular season and new faces and new places. And tonight we have five games on the slate. We get Detroit at Atlanta. Memphis will take on Brooklyn. No Kevin Durant, no Kyrie Irving in this contest tonight. The Jazz will travel to take on the Thunder. We get the Rockets and the Nuggets at 7 o'clock, and the world champion Lakers will take on the Blazers at 8. We'll have an in-depth conversation about the NBA. I did not get to give you my assessment of the Rudy Gobert contract from last week. And look, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. I don't believe the Jazz should have given Rudy Gobert $200-plus million. I understand what he brings to the table. I understand that the Jazz felt they needed to keep their own. Look, I get all of that. It's just a lot of money, and when you're looking at the luxury tax, I don't see a championship team just yet. I just don't. I mean, I go back to the Gordon Hayward deal a few years ago. When he signed with the Celtics, I said this was a blessing in disguise for the Jazz, and it turned out to be the case, right? It was a blessing for Utah to have not locked up Gordon Hayward long-term. I definitely believe you'll get more on that return investment with Gobert than you would have with Hayward. I just worry about the cash-strapped Jazz. And we'll talk more about that. How can the Jazz maneuver around the next 3 years knowing that there's a lot of money wrapped up to Bogdanovich, Jordan Clarkson, Donovan Mitchell, and Rudy Gobert? And the Mitchell was a no-brainer, right? If it was reversed, if it was Donovan getting $200 million and Rudy getting $90 million, I'm fine with that. Obviously, that could not be the case. Well, we'll talk more about the Jazz a little bit later on in the show. That's coming up in just a bit. As far as the NFL is concerned, never a dull moment, especially this time of the year. The Washington football team made some waves today. They released Dwayne Haskins. Is it a surprise? No. It seemed inevitable. But he was benched just yesterday in a loss to Carolina. And hours after he was demoted, behind a player that was on the practice squad less than a month ago, they let him go. Think about that. And when you look at the amount of wasted first-round picks that Washington has spent now on quarterbacks, it's really mind-boggling. And I'm curious to see how long it takes Haskins to find new work. He put on Twitter today, quote, "I take full responsibility for not meeting the standards of an NFL QB and will become a better man and player because of this experience." 2 hours earlier, Ron Rivera told the media on the conference call that Washington would start Tyler Henke if Alex Smith was unable to play in Sunday's season finale. which turns out to be really an important game. Washington can win the NFC East with a victory. This release signals yet just another step to the demise of Haskins. And he's going to cost $8.5 million in dead salary next year, which is a little odd, isn't it? I mean, you see what's happening in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky. Here's the kicker. The Bears, they can get out of the Trubisky contract. It's not going to cost him anything. $8.5 million in dead space? That just tells you that Haskins was a head case while he was in Washington, and I'm curious to see if anyone signs him. That was the big news earlier today, and then last night there was news of the San Diego Padres in Major League Baseball making some waves. They are closing in on a deal with the Tampa Bay Rays that would land them Blake Snell, and they are also deep into trade negotiations, I should say, with the Chicago Cubs that would also bring in Yu Darvish. Darvish was the runner-up in the NL Cy Young race just this last year. It looks as if his career is reborn in Chicago, and now the Cubs, without Theo Epstein calling the shots, looking to move on. See, there's so much to talk about. Plus, we'll dibble in the college football chit-chat as well. The playoffs are set. In fact, coming up this Friday, we get Notre Dame, Alabama. We get Clemson, Ohio State. We'll talk about that and more. It's all coming up on this edition of Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes a strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Three games deep into the new NBA season. In fact, we have Game 3 of the Utah Jazz coming up tonight right here on KOAL. Utah looking to recover from a loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now they'll take on Oklahoma City tonight. Live coverage at 5:50. Tip-off will follow at 6 p.m. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. We'll talk Utah Jazz basketball, and we'll bounce around the entire league. Joining us right now to do that, we have Jameson Welsh. He joins us each Monday to set up a brand new week of the NBA. And Jameson, I hope you had a Merry Christmas. And of course, now with the season off and rolling, it's a fun time, especially with the really short offseason that we got.
Yeah, it seems like the season's in rolling. It just picks up. There's not a whole lot else to say. It's one of those things where things is back to normal, like it never left, and that's kind of where we're at with it. It's pretty fascinating when you think about it. But the NBA season has a bunch of games on every day. We have our first big injury of the season with Spencer Dinwiddie getting hurt, partially torn ACL, pretty much out for the rest of the season. It's going to be a battle of attrition. As long as you're able to stay healthy and everyone knows their roles, teams that are going to contend are going to contend.
The Dinwiddie injury is it's very sad because this is a guy that was looking for some sort of a payday going into this next offseason. Yet with that being said, there's an injury history there. So I'm curious to see how long it takes, and this may sound bad, but I'm curious to see how long it takes for the first nagging injury to hit a player that went through the entire bubble and legitimately got 2 months off. Now, that's not a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it really wasn't a true 2 months because, once everything was over, you kind of had to, take a week or two to kind of just settle down and just get out of that mindset. And the next thing you know, it was September, and then you're back to it again. So it was just it was pretty fascinating how everything shook out. You know what I mean? It was very fascinating how everything played out with this situation. Because you think about it like this. The Lakers and what they went through last year and the minutes those guys had to play in and above one, everything like that. For them to come back, they have a really good general manager because a lot of teams just would have ran it back. We had an example back in 2011 where the season, obviously there's lockout, and the Mavs just kind of ran it back. They didn't improve the team. They just ran it back. The Lakers got more deadlier. They improved the roster immensely. They got rid of Danny Green, brought in, Schroeder, and then they bring in Montrezl Harrell, who, he's an undersized big. He plays very well on offensive end. So you know, that to me is that their leadership in front office is the key.
Yeah, when you look at this Laker team, defending world champs look good so far. I know they suffered a loss on December 22nd to the Clippers, but after that, this team has been rolling, and we saw it last night. I know Minnesota had a very tough back-to-back, but still, with that being said, there are so many different ways this Laker team can beat you. I mean, they just look great in every avenue. The Marc Gasol experiment, I know it's really early, but boy, he looks like a perfect complement. They do this last night to Minnesota without Anthony Davis. The game was never in doubt. Dennis Schroeder looks fantastic. Kyle Kuzma played out of his mind. LeBron still looks good, looks healthy. I mean, all the way around, Jameson, I know it's so early, but as long as this team stays healthy, I just don't see anyone beating this team in a seven-game set. They look that good.
They look that good, and they have a lot, they have really good smart players, and that's the key. It's one thing to have talent, but we have intelligent players as well. Being able to add, Pau Gasol, being able to add Marc Gasol for the minimum, even though he's past his prime, just the knowledge he brings, knowing how to play, knowing how to shoot, that in itself is huge. It's a huge steal because most times you get a guy off the minimum, you know, it is what it is. You know, you got to get what you get. Like, Marc Gasol can still play. He's not the all-star starter that he once was in his career, anything like that, but he can still play the game of basketball. So having him out there for 20 minutes tonight is huge because you have LeBron, who's obviously a smart player. You have Anthony Davis, who's obviously a smart player. So having Marc Gasol out there helps a lot of guys. No, it even helps a guy like Kuzma out because he's always cutting and slashing to the basket, and he gets like easy baskets like that that unlocks the rest of his game. So, again, those little small acquisitions and transactions are the ones that lead to greater success.
Now, while the Lakers looked fantastic, the Clippers got off to a great start, and again, they even beat the Lakers. This is a team that many expect to be there in the end to challenge the Lakers, yet without Kawhi Leonard, they're down 50 points at halftime. And over the course of an NBA season, you see things that are kind of eye-popping, but you really don't pay a lot of attention to it. I have to pay attention to this, Jameson. They were down 77-27 at halftime to the Dallas Mavericks without Kawhi Leonard. Is he that important to this team, or is this one of those things that we just kind of throw away?
So the Clippers had the late game on Friday. When I mean late, they had the 7:30 p.m. game, so it was 8:30 local time in Denver. The game lasts about 3 hours, but you leave the arena after midnight Saturday morning. And then you either travel back to the hotel and leave Saturday morning, or you leave that night. So you get back sometime Saturday. You have the early game Sunday, which no one likes. No one likes the early Sunday afternoon game at noon or 12:30, whatever you want to call it. So it's just a very bad situation. However, there is no excuse with the roster they have to be down by 50 by anybody. There is just no excuse. They have too much talent for that to happen, in my eyes anyway. I mean, I know they have their shortcomings, but come on, man, that's ridiculous. There's no way that should take place.
Let's talk about the Utah Jazz. Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. The Jazz tonight take on Oklahoma City. They top the Blazers by 20 to open up the season. Portland doesn't look that great. Minnesota, who had one of the more difficult back-to-backs you'll have all year with the Jazz and the Lakers. Utah suffers a loss in that first game for Minnesota. And this was one of those contests where you look at two former Lakers, by the way, and D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson. They go toe-to-toe in this contest. Russell scored 25, Clarkson scored 23. When you look at this Jazz team, very short sample size, I understand that, but did they make the necessary improvements from what you've seen in the early parts of this season to say, okay, now they're a top three or four team of the West?
Well, they could be a top four team out West. That's not really a thing. Like, you know, that's cool, but eventually, you got to be able to, with the salary they're paying out, when you look at the max contracts they've offered out the last few weeks and the money they have on the books now, you're expected to win a championship or compete for a championship. Being top four out West is cool, but that really ain't it when you look at it. Me personally, when I look at the situation that the Jazz are in, they're stuck in a level of a higher version of a hamster wheel. When I mean that, the hamster wheel is an NBA stuck between like the 6 and 10 seed. They're basically doing the same thing every year. You're not bad enough to be in the lottery, and you're not good enough to be a competitor. Now, they're in the second round hamster wheel, which means that they'll be competing in the first round. They may get out of that, but the second round comes, they're going to lose because they're just not good enough. And I just don't think that's the smart way to do things with the salary cap situation that they're in. Now, with that being said, they have some pieces that can move and some things they can do to improve their roster. But right now, I look at a team that has a second-round ceiling, and I don't like signing Rudy Gobert to $200 million. He's a very good player for what they do, but signing a one-dimensional player to that kind of money limits your ceiling, and that has never worked out. And this is going to be another situation where it just does not work out.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz were in a tough spot as far as the salaries are concerned. Obviously, re-upping Donovan Mitchell's a no-brainer. There's no question about that. And you and I had talked about Rudy Gobert a lot over the course of the offseason and what they should actually pay him. I guess they got a little bit of a discount. Still, you're looking at $205 million. But when you look around the rest of this roster, there's not a lot of room for maneuvering. I mean, Joe Ingles has 2 years and $22 million left on his contract. That's important. Derek Favors is locked up for the next three seasons, counting this one. I guess you can look at Mike Conley, and maybe that's a contract that at some point in time this season you could move for some pieces. $34 million this year, final year of his deal. But the bulk of this roster, when you look at the $19, $18 million that Bojan Bogdanovic is going to make over the next couple of seasons, this team, for the most part, is what it is, right? And so you have to hope, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to hope that Quinn Snyder can mold your key pieces, Gobert, Bogdanovic, Clarkson, Favors, Mitchell. You have to hope that he can mold these pieces to forming a championship-level team into the Western Conference. I'm just going to be real. It ain't happening with those five.
It's not, like, not for what they're trying to do. Now, if they're just trying to make the playoffs and be competitive, cool, but you know, at the end of the day, your goal is to win a championship. And when you're repaying luxury tax, you got to be in the, you know, mind frame of, hey, if we're paying the tax, we got to be in it. And I just don't think that's the case right now. I really don't. Now, I could be wrong. You know, I've been wrong before. I've been wrong again. And these things do happen. But look at the Jazz team and their, you know, with how they're, you know, configured. It looks like a team that is going to be a, you know, and like you said, the top four out west, maybe the fourth seed. Playing a team at the five seed who's really good, that can give them a run. And then the second round, the inevitable happens.
Yeah, and just to point this out, I do not blame Dennis Lindsay. It's a tough spot to be in. It really is. I mean, free agency has not been kind to Utah over the past decade or so, and you have someone like Gobert, who is a defensive player of the year, and as you pointed out, does a lot of great things for what they want to do. This is the structure of the current collective bargaining agreement in which smaller markets have to overpay to keep talent. And while it seems like a good idea on paper, Jameson, this, in my mind, it will fall in line alongside a list of smaller markets overpaying to keep good talent, not great talent, at great talent prices.
So here's the thing. No one's going to Utah unless they have a connection through Delta that's getting them to their favorite destination. All right, it's not happening. You get drafted by the Jazz, or you get traded by the Jazz. You're not getting a marquee free agent unless it's like a sign trade or something like. I can't name the last high profile free agent that had Utah on the list. So with that being said, you have to do things like overpay for Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
You have to lock up Donovan Mitchell, which they should have. Yeah, that's a good move. But you have to draft extremely well. And you got to find, you know, guys that are undrafted free agents and hitting gyms at a very high rate. Because if you don't, you're put in a really bad spot. And that's kind of where they're at right now. But with that being said, hey, I will say this. They do have a player in Donovan Mitchell that can hold his own against anyone for a game. However, over a series, it's very difficult for a guy at 6'3 to do those things that Donovan Mitchell tries to do over a long series. One game, two games, cool. But over a series versus bigger players and better players, very difficult.
Let's end with this, Jameson. We'll talk about the widespread of the league, kind of a vague question. We'll talk about the biggest surprise over the course of three games for you. And I'll start. I am pleasantly surprised at how crisp Kevin Durant looks. I know this is one of the greatest scores, one of the most unique scores we have ever seen in the history of the league. I get that. But you just never know how someone is going to respond from an Achilles injury, especially after missing an entire season, right? This guy comes out, 26 points a game is what he's averaging over the course of three games so far. Small sample size, I get it. But the eye test does a lot. I'm surprised he looks this good. What's your biggest surprise up to this point in time?
That's not the biggest surprise for me because he had 500 days off from his last game to now, so not really surprised at that. I'm happy, definitely happy, but the Cavaliers being undefeated is a surprise to me. Now, we know they're, you know, we know what it's going to eventually end up being, but, you know, them being, I believe they're 3-0, if I'm not mistaken.
They are. They're 3-0, and if you look at that division, the Pacers are 3-0, while the Bucks are 1-2, and I tend to stray away from that because over the course of 72 games, we know what's going to happen. We know who's going to win that division.
Yeah, but it's surprising. Like, when you look at the standing, you see the Cavs at 3-0, you're like, whoa, and then you look at the situation, Colin Sexton and Darius Garland are actually playing pretty good. And you look at it like, I remember when they drafted Garland, they were like, I don't know. But Colin Sexton is the pick they got from the Kyrie trade, and it looks like it's panning out. So there's some good stuff there. I mean, at least there is something to get happy about if you're a Cavs fan. But being 3-0, yeah, I don't remember them being 3-0 before. So this is a good thing for them.
Yeah, they're being 3-0, and I know that you're a big fan of Sabonis. Indiana at 3-0 as well. It's a good story. Still, at the end of the day, Milwaukee wins that division. There's no question. They're 1-2. They'll bounce back. They'll power their way through in that division. It's only a matter of time. That's a good point. It's a good point. Cleveland at 3-0. Jameson Walsh, you get a basketballnews.com, our guest today here on the show. Jameson, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
Basketballnews.com, ESPN 1100. ESPN 1480, and then, of course, here.
Jameson, always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again next week. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
I go into every game plan expecting it to work, to be quite honest with you.
Touchdown, Alabama. Devontae Smith coming from left to right, made the catch, and was gone.
I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is hashtag I don't care.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
You know it ain't my time to call it a day, but it's about time you remember the name, hey.
You know what hasn't been entertaining as far as the national sports scene is concerned? Bowl season. And really, have you paid attention to the college football bowl games at all? They've been a little difficult to get into. I mean, they started on December 21st. We had the Myrtle Beach Bowl. I'm not sorry that I missed that one. We did have the Boca Raton Bowl, BYU and UCF. I mean, it gave us two names that we are familiar with, right? And BYU in Central Florida. Cougars looked good, got the victory. You know, the Montgomery Bowl, didn't care anything about it. The New Mexico Bowl, didn't care anything about it. Really, bowl season has just not been good. The Cure Bowl between Liberty and Coastal Carolina, that's been the best game that we have had up to this point. And I personally thought it was a fitting ending to Coastal Carolina season because I didn't buy the hype to begin with. People talking about this is a team that should be in the college football playoffs. No, they had no business being in the college football playoffs. Instead, they get the Cure Bowl and they lose to Liberty. Could you imagine what Alabama would have done to Coastal Carolina? They gave up a 37 spot to Liberty. Now we're starting to transition into some of the bigger bowl games that will be better. Like the Cheez-It Bowl tomorrow. It's Oklahoma State and Miami. That's an entertaining game. That one actually starts at 3:30 p.m. We get the Alamo Bowl, Texas and Colorado. The Mayo Bowl, the Duke's Mayo Bowl. That's a real bowl this year. Wake Forest and Wisconsin. Cotton Bowl, we get Oklahoma and Florida. The Armed Forces Bowl, Tulsa, Mississippi State. These are better games, but my biggest fear in college football was always the playoffs taking away drastically from the other bowls. Now, I don't think that's necessarily the case. Every now and then, we'll see a bowl that pops up that, at least for me personally, I'm excited about. Outside of the New Year's Day Six bowls. You know, like the Cotton Bowl, that's a big game. Oklahoma, Florida, that'll be entertaining football. I don't mind the Alamo Bowl. Texas and Colorado will be a good football game. And, I just mentioned the Cheez-It Bowl a moment ago. There's a couple of games here and there where the matchups are intriguing enough that I think college football fans will watch. But honestly, outside of the six main bowl games, does anyone care about bowl season, especially this year in college football? I know you fans did not have a lot to cheer about, and then there was the unspeakable tragedy over the weekend with Ty Jordan, which football means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things. But I just felt like it was really hard for Ute fans to get into this season to begin with. That same goes for any Pac-12 school. It was just hard to get into the season, wasn't it? Now we look at the New Year's Day 6, including the college football playoff, which we did not have a chance to talk about last week. And it's set. New Year's Day. First question, did the committee get it right? Absolutely. Top four teams in the country, no doubt. Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State. 1-4 in Bama and Notre Dame. Right now, Alabama, 20.5-point favorites. Don't mind the spread. And I know there were a lot of media members in the state of Utah that were upset that Notre Dame got into the playoffs over the likes of Cincinnati or Coastal Carolina. Give me a break. They beat the number one team of the country in the middle of the season. They went undefeated in a Power 5 conference regular season. I don't care if it's Notre Dame. It doesn't matter if it was Texas A&M. It doesn't matter if it was a rematch with Florida. Alabama would be 3-score favorites against any team that was a viable option to be put in at number four. And for those who want to say Cincinnati never had a chance to get in, yeah, well, guess what? There's a group of schools in the Pac-12 that didn't have a chance to get in this year either. I have no remorse for Cincinnati whatsoever. If you watched college football, it was obvious who the four best teams in the country were this season. If there's a gripe to be made with, it's Ohio State. And Dabo Swinney has talked about this multiple times. He had Ohio State outside of his top 10 because he said he didn't feel that a team that did not play at least 9 games should be considered for the playoffs. That's a more viable argument than not putting Notre Dame in because they lost to Clemson by 24 in the ACC title game. There was no other school in the country that would have had to have beaten Clemson twice to get into the college football playoff. Now, who wins this game? Alabama will win this football game. You can't pick Notre Dame in this contest. I think Alabama has massive weapons on the outside that are going to give Notre Dame fits in the secondary. I think Alabama has the second best quarterback in the country. I can't put Mac Jones ahead of Trevor Lawrence. I just can't do it. But Mac Jones is pretty darn good. Alabama would have been 3-score favorites against anyone. And the idea that we can't put Notre Dame in because they lost by 24 to Clemson in the ACC title game, or they lost by 28 to Alabama in the national championship game 8 years ago, that's stupid logic. Just stupid. The idea that past big games are an indication, Notre Dame's 0-6 in New Year's Day 6 Bowls since the BCS came about. That means nothing. It's irrelevant. Bama would be 3-score favorites against any team that you feel is a viable option for number four. And I'm telling you, there's a pretty good chance that Alabama will handily beat any team that you believe has a chance to get in at number four. I think Notre Dame's good enough defensively that maybe they can make this a game. Maybe. Will Alabama cover 3 scores? It's going to be close. Give me Alabama by 14 in this game. So no, they don't cover the 20.5 points. But the fact of the matter is, Alabama's the best football team in the country. That includes Clemson, that includes Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, any of the other schools that you want to put in the conversation of getting into the playoffs. The Coastal Carolina talk, that's ludicrous. BYU fans almost feel like they have to have Coastal Carolina in the conversation to justify what BYU accomplished this year. Eye test accounts for a lot. Alabama-Notre Dame 1-4 matchup. That is the correct matchup for the college football playoff in the Rose Bowl, which will take place in Arlington, Texas, by the way. 2-3, Clemson-Ohio State. I think we have a dandy here, but again, I think that it's Clemson that comes out on top. The talk of Ohio State only playing 6 games, I think that's going to be a factor in this contest. When you go back and you look at what Ohio State has accomplished so far this season, you know, instead of looking at only playing 6 games as a positive, I think you could look at it as a negative and say that Ohio State has not had the proper time, especially with the mess that the Big Ten was in, to really develop and work out the kinks. I mean, you could go back and look at times this season where Clemson and Notre Dame didn't look great, and you could correct problems. Clemson against Boston College. Notre Dame against Louisville. Ohio State hasn't really had an opportunity to correct those problems. I mean, they got Nebraska out of the gate. They beat Penn State. They had Rutgers, then they had a game canceled. Then they had Indiana, and it was a battle, 42-35, and then they had a game canceled. And then they got Michigan State, and they blew past them, but then they had a game canceled. And then they get Northwestern, and if you watch the Big Ten Championship, Northwestern's defense gave Ohio State fits in that game, which, to be honest, I don't know that I would pick Ohio State against Clemson or Notre Dame just based on the physicality of both squads' defenses. This is how far ahead of the rest Alabama is. And this is why I'll pick Alabama to win the national championship. But I think we get a rematch of Bama and Clemson in the national title game. I just think that Clemson, A, healthy, B, Trevor Lawrence is back, he looks great. And one of the things that Clemson did in the ACC title game was they ran the ball effectively. And when Clemson's able to run the ball effectively, that'll sideline Ohio State's greatest asset, Justin Fields, who is one of the most athletic players in the country. So I don't see Ohio State winning this game. And for everyone that keeps bringing up that it's not fair that Ohio State only played six games, look, that's a legitimate argument, but I can look at it from the negative as well. Yeah, they only had six games to get it figured out. That's a problem. I mean, it takes teams 2 months to play their best football. Ohio State has not had that opportunity. And if you talk to any coach at any level, they will tell you that practice time is not anything close to game time. You can't simulate and practice what you see in a game. So the gist of this particular segment, bowl season, not good. Finally, we'll get some games that we care about. I mean, there's a lot less games this year. I guess that's the one positive. But outside of the college football playoffs, it has rendered the other games almost meaningless to the point to where nobody even cares about them. I mean, really, how many people outside of BYU fans watched that game against Central Florida? I watched it because I was entertained by the idea that BYU would go up against Central Florida. I happen to have some time off. I had nothing to do. I'm going to watch this game. But how many went out of their way to watch it? Not many. And a lot of this is a byproduct of the college football playoff, and I think it's even worse this year, knowing that we had a Power 5 conference that never had a remote chance of getting into that college football playoff. Still, the playoffs are set. I think it's the top four teams in the country. Give me Bama. Give me Clemson. Give me Bama over Clemson. I know we'll talk more about the playoffs in the coming days as we continue to break down and preview the two big games coming up this Friday. But that's my early assessment on bowl season. I had to get that in there. Last week, being out of the studio, that was the killer for me. I wanted to talk college football. I wanted to be in the studio Monday just to talk about the playoffs and the four teams that were picked. Now I kind of had to condense it a little bit, but that's okay. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll talk Major League Baseball as we get set to close out this edition of the show right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We don't have a ton of time left here on Drive Time Sports. So tomorrow, Football Tuesday, I think by the time we hit Wednesday, we'll have a better understanding of the moves that have been agreed to in principle in the major leagues regarding the Tampa Bay Rays and the San Diego Padres. The Padres right now also linked to a move that would send Yu Darvish to San Diego. So the Padres going all in. So since we only have a couple of minutes and these trades are agreed to in principle, let's talk about the Tampa Bay Rays, the defending American League champions. They trade their Cy Young award-winning pitcher Blake Snell. And honestly, they get a group of prospects in return. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this show as we talk about the Rays. This is a team that's looking to cut costs, obviously. That's what they're saying. Do you buy that? Is that the reason why they moved on from Snell? Is that the reason that they let Morton go? Or does this have to do with the fact that maybe that Kevin Cash lost that clubhouse when he pulled Blake Snell in Game 6 of the World Series?
I think that's it. The one you just brought up,
pulling that guy up 1-0 in game six in that series, I think that was the writing on the wall. You could see how mad he was in the dugout. And I just don't think you could bring that guy back to that clubhouse after all that happened and you know, the things that he said to go along with it.
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
No, he
probably,
shouldn't be.
No, and he probably should not have been pulled from the game. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. Kevin Cash got them there with analytics. It just did not work out. But again, Charlie Morton signs a one-year, $15 million deal with the Braves, and now Snell, who won the Cy Young in 2018, has been dealt to the Padres. That leaves just Tyler Glasnow from their big three that they at one time had. And before, again, I don't want to talk about the Padres today because it's not completely finished. I mean, I think that they're putting together a team that is going to be fantastic. I don't know that they're better than the Dodgers. I don't know that they're better than the Braves, but they're definitely trying. So if you're a Padres fan, you have to be happy with what you're seeing. But really, when you look at the Rays, it's kind of, it fits their mold, doesn't it? They're constantly looking to manage their payroll.
Well, they made the World Series years ago and did the same thing.
They did.
And
they did.
That's just what they do. They go for it. They build it up with the prospects. They go all in. Doesn't pay off. They trade them all off, and they start over.
Had they even won the World Series, I think they would still be doing this.
They still do the same thing, yeah.
I mean, they did this with Chris Archer. They did Price. They had James Shields, right?
Yeah, they had all those guys, and they did it. So even if they would have won, they would have made these trades still. So it's just the mold, the franchise, that's what they do.
It's odd. It really is odd. I mean, I don't buy into the large market, small market, because when you have the talent that the Rays had, I mean, there's no reason why Tampa could not have gotten back to the World Series this upcoming season. There's no reason. Is there any team in the American League? And I know that Charlie Morton leaves. He signs a one-year deal at $15 million. But is there any team in the American League that you look at and say, yeah, the Rays aren't getting past that squad?
No, there's none. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
It would be very difficult to be a Tampa Bay Ray fan. Now, on the flip side, I've said this a million times on the show, and I'm going to go back to it. The haul that they get for Snell, Francisco Mejia, Blake Hunt, I don't know. I mean, he's got a high ceiling. Same could be said for Cole Wilcox. But the main reason for this deal is that they bring in Luis Patino.
Yeah.
And Luis Patino is one of the top, I think he's top like 22 in baseball. I think he's number 22, if I'm not mistaken. He's got a wild arm. There's something there.
But it's going to take years for these guys to develop. Even if they do, you don't know how it turns out.
I trade prospects any day to build a team.
I do too. For the proven commodity, I will trade every prospect I have.
Yep.
For. And that's the same with the Reds. They don't want to trade prospects for a shortstop, the kid in Cleveland. Why?
No, I would, especially when you have a team that can contend, and there is no reason to believe the Padres cannot contend for a World Series title. Again, they're one of the top three teams in the National League. If the trades go through where they bring in Snell, and they also bring in Yu Darvish, which it looks like that's going to happen, it's just a matter of time. Here's the other kicker. If they complete these deals and they hang on to Mackenzie Gore, who is their top prospect, yeah, what a win this offseason. And it also makes me wonder what the Braves and the Dodgers have working, right? Because
Trevor Bauer
is still out there.
He wants to be a Dodger. I think when it's all said and done, that's where Bauer ends up, is with the Dodgers.
And there's DJ LeMahieu, and there's the Nolan Arenado
Lindor.
Francisco Lindor.
Yeah.
And so the Padres are looking to add as many pieces as they can to that rotation. And I love Zach Davies. I think they have a great core as it is. I'm not going to go ahead and write them in as the NL favorites because, again, I would still put them at number three. But, boy, they've had a brilliant start to the winter offseason. There's no doubt about it. Out of time on this edition of the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. We'll talk NFL football. We'll talk local high school basketball. We'll have a great show lined up for you tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscaretti. Be safe. We are out.